not everyone is a football fan or an NFL fan. I'm more of a CFL guy myself, but I imagine there's a few of us that might even admit to being Olympic junkies. I think I know one or two in this group, yeah. And of course, the excitement will build. Yesterday, my dad and I enjoyed watching one of our favorite sports together, and you would be correct in guessing a whole bunch of different sports, but we saw this one live, and it wasn't hockey this time, which is what we usually enjoy together. It was tennis, if you can imagine, on possibly one of the busiest sports weekends of the year as the Winter Olympics got started and folks prepared for the Super Bowl today. We were up at UBC watching tennis players from Canada and Brazil contend for the prize of continuing to play for the World Championship of Tennis, also known as the Davis Cup. My ticket for this event was my dad's Christmas gift to me. And we love to play tennis sometimes together, and we love watching it together. But we encountered one problem during that event, which was, you know, all afternoon and turned out all evening, too, because it was close. We had to eat, right? And unlike some of the big venues in town, we were at the Thunderbird Arena at UBC, which is a lovely facility, but the food choices are a little bit limited. And, you know, so we got some fries, but the problem was we didn't have salt. Can you imagine? Some of you are going, what's the problem? Well, fries without salt, I don't know, just doesn't work. We had to find some salt, or the fries would be ruined. Not the whole day, but the fries would be ruined. Now, I'm being overly dramatic, of course, but even if we could survive without salt on our fries, human beings cannot survive without salt. Not as much as many of us have, but without a little bit of salt on a regular basis, we would be in a lot of trouble. It's essential for our muscles to work. The healthcare professionals in the room know this. I learned recently from my friend and colleague, Vicky McPhee, who is the minister of Simons Valley United Church in Calgary, who I'm indebted to for some of the material in today's sermon. I learned from her that salt is essential for helping us to move our muscles and for the synapses to fire properly and to regulate the fluids in our body, especially our blood. Absolutely essential. So salt is a basic necessity of life. Maybe not for fries, but for life. And it should, of course, be made available to all people. But as soon as humans discovered a long time ago that they could make money from salt, because it wasn't available everywhere, nearly but not quite everywhere, it became a source of wealth and power and greed and oppression, mistreatment. In history, in fact, there's a direct correlation between authoritarian leaders and salt taxes. In India, for example, salt had been taxed for many years before the arrival of the British East India Trading Company, but when the British Crown began ruling India, the oppressive taxes certainly stayed in place. And just about 100 years ago from now, Mohandas Gandhi found himself at the forefront of the Indian independence movement, along with other leaders. And he advocated nonviolent direct action as a way of protesting, and he was one of the leaders of the Great Salt March in 1930 to protect their control over salt and to enforce their salt taxes. It was illegal for people to harvest dried salt from the coastal beaches, just to go where it's laying on top of the sand and pick it up. It was illegal. So they organized a salt march, and people walked not that far by our standards from the coast, but they walked with Gandhi and many others. Almost 400 kilometers they walked over many days, with more and more joining along the way, until thousands were part of this salt march. And when they arrived on the coast, the crowds began to gather up the salt illegally from the beach. Gandhi was arrested along with thousands of other national leaders. 60,000 people, in fact, were arrested and jailed during the civil disobedience events of that year and subsequently. These actions got the attention of the world and certainly the British Empire. And it took time, but it started to move and triggered a change in attitude about Indian independence, which finally happened 17 years later in 1947. Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth." But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything, but it's thrown out and trampled underfoot. Now, Jesus wouldn't have known about a climate like ours, where we have to throw it out on the street and trample it underfoot in many parts of this country, as many of our compatriots are discovering in recent weeks. In our wintry country, even the salt that we throw on our streets has to be salty, because if it's not salty, it's not going to melt the snow and do what we need it to do. Here's another thing that my friend Vicky shared with me. Salt does not lose its taste except by dilution. Oh, someone knew that already. Apparently, Jesus borrowed this expression from an ancient Palestinian proverb referring to the uselessness of impure salt from which the sodium chloride had been leached. It was no longer salty at that point because it's been diluted. If there is so little salt left, it's no longer salty. He was using this image to teach his disciples, to remind them that any church, any group of followers that adapts itself so completely to the secular world around it that its distinctive calling is forgotten. That the church, that gathering of faithful people, renders itself useless if we allow our mission, our source of identity, to be so diluted lose our saltiness. He was reminding them that they were a necessary seasoning for society around them. That was the point of them being a people, a group. They are an essential, we are an essential ingredient for God's love to become apparent in the world. So we cannot, we must not allow ourselves to be diluted by the values and the wants and demands that surround us. That doesn't mean that we condemn others. That doesn't mean that we are arrogant. We know what happens when there's way too much salt in anything, right? My initial question when I started looking at this passage earlier this week was, how can we be salt and light in the world, of course? But in this scene, if we look at it carefully, Jesus is actually reassuring his disciples and his followers that who they are, what they are, is enough for God to work with, enough for God to work through them. He's encouraging his followers not to sway from their purpose of teaching and healing and serving others, sharing the good news, and not to be distracted by the cynical naysayers, but to remain true, to remain salty, and to let God work through them. That they already had it within them, together. When Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world," the "you" in his statement is not an individual you. He didn't say you individually. He said you together as a group. Being salt, being light, are not individual tasks. They are a group effort. He's not referring to the status that one person can hold. He's not giving us a to-do list, but a mission statement. This is our statement of mission. One does not reach the achievement level of being salt of the earth or becoming the light. Calling someone the salt of the earth is a great compliment, but we have no positions in the church called salt maker or light bearer. It is what we do together, all of us. The call is not for us to become the light, for that is God's place in our lives, in our worlds. In the time of Jesus, God was understood as the source of light for daily life. God is the light. When Jesus walked the earth, those who followed him understood him as the light who was in their midst. And in today's reading, Jesus turns around and tells us that we are to become light in the world. But we need to remember, we don't need to create the light ourselves. We don't create the light ourselves. The light is God, the divine source of all life and goodness. When Jesus walked the earth, people came to understand that we are the window through which God's light can shine, the mirror that reflects divine light, to reveal to the world God's love for all creation. And through that love, we allow peace to reign upon the earth. We are the conduits, the media, if you will, by which God's light is shared and peace on earth will reign. I know it's hard sometimes for us to listen to the news, to watch what's going on in the world, but I hope we have also taken some heart in seeing how people of goodwill are putting their lives on the line by the thousands in the United States and in many other places, in cities all over, in small towns too, to stand up for what is just, to stand against injustice and violence. To be considered salt of the earth in our time is a good thing. To be salty is to be grounded in God's love and our purpose, to be reflections of Christ in the world, to be God's love manifested in the world. To be a light means illuminating the way for those who live in the shadows of fear, of uncertainty, of insecurity, of hate and violence. Being a light means being there wherever we are, in all times and all places, each in our corner of the world, you in your small corner and I in mine, but all of us together. We sometimes dismiss or diminish what we do for others to be light, to be salt of the earth, because what any one of us does is small. It's true. But today I want to invite you to take a moment to consider the salt marches from over 100 years ago that you have walked, the salt marches also that you have walked in your life, as part of the church perhaps, but as part of other groups as well. How have you shared the light of love with others? How do you bring salt and seasoning to the world? Through art, through a word, through a smile, through acts of service and caring, from your home to the wider community. Take a moment now to reflect on that. By God's grace, by being truly who you are and made to be, you are salt. You are light. You have within you all that is needed for God's work to be done, God's light to be reflected. You are enough, full stop. Grounded in God's love, together we are salt and we are light. We love and we are loved. We are a window through which God's love can be seen and experienced. Now, some of you know the board is asking every one of us to be part of a short conversation during this month to share what is important about this community of faith for us and how we believe God is calling us to be salt and light in our community. That's our job, our part, to figure out how to reflect God's light in our own corner of the world. And so some of our groups I know the choir, I think, already did this week, right? And other groups have already had that conversation of collecting our reflections on what's important about who we are and what we might be called to do in the near future. We're inviting you to be part of that conversation in each of the small groups throughout our church community. And if you're not part of a particular one or can't make it to one of those gatherings today, after worship, after you've grabbed your choir, your coffee, I mean, you can join us in the back corner of the hall, the activity room, and also share your feedback about that today. We'll have another opportunity in 2 weeks to do that as well. Friends, we are the salt of the earth, seasoning and helping the world to move its muscles and fire its brain cells of humanity to bring peace, healing, and restoration. Thanks be to God. Let's see.